Accession number 29954, reel 12.
To get engaged or even marry. I didn't think of that until Theo one day said, he said to me, "You know she thinks you're going to marry her." Lena was her name. I said, "Why?" I did nothing. I just gave her English lessons. He said, "Well, she thinks you wouldn't give her English lessons unless you wanted her to come to England with you." And of course she would come to England with you. They would all come to England with you. So the thought began to grow, and I had a very strange period whilst I went regularly to that little place. Actually, in that built-in square, which was not much bigger than this room, well, one room was about as big as the room, there was a little division there, and there was another little room, a bit like that, and that was it. And it was rock. The rest was naked rock. And the door was a curtain, a canvas curtain hanging through. That was all the door they had. And that's where the kids had to sleep. But opposite was a kind of a brick tower, which must have had a staircase. I was never inside in it, because the woman and her husband slept at the top. I have a feeling there was a little room halfway between. Must have been very tiny, because the whole tower was no bigger than this. They all worked for the local padrone, landowner. He owned everything. And they all worked for him. And when he wanted the boy to help with the harvest, they took him out of the school. The priest changed the day of a communion to suit the landowner. It was a terrible situation. I'd never come across anything like that. And when I said to her, "Well, what would he do if you don't send the boy to work and harvest?" She said, "I don't know. He'll send the carabinieri." They didn't know. But she was a lovely old woman. Once I was stationed there, I found out that my brother had come to Italy. I hadn't seen him for 7 years. We hadn't seen each other for 7 years. I told you that he left to go to Palestine.
Yes.
He joined the Palestinian army, a brigade, and we found out we were both in Italy. Actually, he was somewhere near Florence at that time, near behind the British army, because the Palestinian brigade was also not allowed to be right in the front line. But they did have guns, at least, which we didn't. Well, I did by that time. I never walked around without my pistol. I felt tough that way, you know. If you think I had no human weaknesses, think again. I had more than my share. And so we wrote to each other, and we arranged to meet each other. He was going to have leave, and he had a girlfriend in Salerno. He had landed at Salerno, but after the official landing, because Salerno was the only port where anyone landed until later on another landing was added. But I had to pretend she was his fiancée. I shouldn't say anything about the girl he was engaged to in Palestine. He had told her, she'd seen the photo, that she was his sister. So I had to pretend I had a sister. I have to tell you, I didn't like this from the beginning, but, you know, I was going to see my brother, and that was it. I wrote home, Freddy and I are going to meet each other next week, and I had, of course, not believed that I would be given permission to go to Salerno, but I was given permission by Jimmy Darton was the training. Jimmy Bennett was not with us in Italy. Jimmy Darton was our local officer in charge of operations. And Jimmy Darton had given, he said, "Of course, you know, you don't tell anybody what you're doing, not even your brother." And I went to, and a couple of days before that weekend, had another letter from my brother. He hadn't got leave. Now, you must understand my state of mind that time. I thought any moment Theo and I might be dropped. We were supposed to be ready at any moment to be dropped. We'd been given all those clothes, all those things we'd been allocated in London, and in fact sometimes worried about what will I say when I say I've started using the first aid kit. Perhaps before I go to this next bit, I'll tell you one other thing that suddenly developed. Somehow or other, I don't know what happened, but one day Theo came upstairs to me. We were studying maps a lot there of the area that we thought we were going to be dropped, south of Graz. Same area that actually that Georgie Brown and someone were dropped, but we didn't know that. And O'Hara, who was there, had already been there for a long time. He had been used as a dispatcher for Italian partisans who were dropped in the north. By the way, I've got the English text of that officer's book that Peter Pirker has translated. You could borrow it if you want to do
Martin
it.
Martin Smith, Patrick, yeah. Martin Smith. That would be, yes, very much so.
And you can make a copy. It's a bit boring, but it is interesting for what happened and for you and one's knowledge about what was going on there. A woman turned up outside our door, fisherman's door. She had a rash on her head, and she'd heard there was a doctor. Theo said, "Well, you better deal with it. You can speak Italian." I said, "But what do? I don't know anything about rashes." Well, we had learned one rule: if it's wet, treat it dry. If it's dry, treat it wet. In other words, no ointment if it's wet, ointment if it's dry. And I used that written appointment, gave it to her to put on her hair, and it must have worked. It was probably a simple rash. Anyway, that from then on, a little flow of people from the village, which was called Lo Sciale Garappa, came to our door, and I became the local doctor, which is very strange because I really knew nothing about it. I mean, just what we'd been told about with this first case. But a lot of them had septic wounds. So I began to use my powder more and more. Then come back to my brother. 2 days before, my brother wrote he hadn't been given leave. I went frantic because I thought any moment I might disappear. This is my great chance of seeing him again. I got on, against the rules, I went to Monopoly, where I found Miss Major Darton, who told me off for having come there because I wasn't supposed to know without permission to do that. You know the word Monopoly probably very well. And I begged him to try and get my brother to get leave, and he did. I got the message from him the next day that my brother would come on leave on Monday, but as the leave transport had gone, he would have to make his own way to Salerno. And he arranged to get his jeep to give me a lift. He had sent his jeep apparently to Rome or something. Give me a lift to the outskirts of Salerno, and four had to be ready at 5 a.m, 6 a.m. And his driver, and of course driver and I couldn't talk to each other. He wasn't allowed to talk to except for
pleasantries.
But the interesting thing was that when we got to the other side of the Pennines, were not very high at this point, but you did go over some sort of a ridge, black snowflakes came down. Apparently a week before, the Vesuvius had erupted, and it's still a week later, there were still black ashes coming through the air. And he dropped me on the outskirts of Salerno. My way to that family, it was a teacher's family, and they welcomed me. Of course, I was the brother of their prospective son-in-law. There were three lovely girls, different age groups. The one that my brother was engaged to, I find quite ugly, so I wondered what different tastes people have. And I had a wonderful time with them, spent the night, they gave me, never thought of giving them anything, do you know? I was always very thoughtless, always took things as they came along. Only when somebody mentioned, or would I think of bringing something, or I always bought something from my parents whenever I came. But I wasn't the type who was very thoughtful about this kind of thing. And anyway, trying to repair a blackout they had, I blacked the whole house out. But they were living in a flat, so I had a nice room, and waited for the next day when my brother was due to come. Before he arrived that same day, somebody from his regiment arrived, because the leave lorry had already come, and said, no, your brother won't come. They never allow anyone to come by himself, because we are all foreigners. They're worried that there'll be trouble. I said, but I've been promised he'll come tomorrow. Next morning I was woken up by this, I can't think of his name at the moment, but the professore. I said, I should report. He looked very worried, and he said, I should report to the military police in the town. I went to military police, and they had a request for me. My brother had fallen ill. I should go to Rome and see the, and go to the rabbi there, the military rabbi, you know. Well, I knew exactly what happened. He'd had asthma as a child. He'd had one of his asthma attacks. I got a sort of official lift. They had a kind of lorry that was used for commuting to Rome and to Naples, and I got a lift with them, and I just did not, it never occurred to me there could be anything else. But when a thought approached me, this cannot, nothing can. I came to the rabbi, I got a lift out from outside Rome into it. A little boy tried to pinch my haversack, but the driver had given me a lift, had seen him arrive, had run around his lorry and grabbed the little boy and my haversack. I went to the rabbi, and he told me my brother had been run over by in a traffic accident. You know, really know the story. I cried. Then I insisted on going to see him. The rabbi said, don't. No, I did. And I was sorry I did, because he looked awful. Then I went back to Salerno. And then I went to the prostitute that apparently my brother had visited once. Strange things human beings do, and I did. Perhaps I thought it was a connection, I don't know. I never went to, technically never in my life, went to prostitutes. I don't know whether I ever again either. But she was also knew my brother. It wasn't just, the other Palestinian had taken me to her, said, oh, she was your brother's favorite, and she knew him very well. And she did. This is a strange confession. I don't know, is that going to go to the Imperial Museum? And I went back, got my lift back to billets, and they already knew. And you know, of course they didn't know what to say. Oh, well, Faltichek was with us as well, who changed his name to Fulton. So it was Fulton, O'Hara, he was not there at the moment, was away dispatching. Neumann, Fladnik, and my officer, they all lamely expressed their condolences. But I have to say that within a day or two I carried on as if nothing had happened, but that was on the outside. Inside, I've actually never got over this, not even to this day. Even now I have difficulty telling you this, but 2 years ago I could not even have told it to you the way I have just now. I must just mention what Michael Harrow did. Michael Harrow got this extra job, for which he was paid highly, to get on a plane with Italian pilots who were dropped where Martin Smith. I didn't know that at the time, but he mentions O'Hara without knowing his name. It's quite clear that this was O'Hara. A British officer from Monopoly brought, and when O'Hara told me, he was scared shit. Shitless is the word.
But he told you this. He
told me that he was doing this. Yes, yes. O'Hara and I were very close friends since he was in the last group that had joined us in Britain. And he was a great bragger. But he was tall. He looked like John Wayne. And it fitted to him, you know. He would twirl his pistol around and grab it and talk. But when you got to know him, he was the kindest, most good-hearted fellow you could imagine. And we went together around when we were having special training in Scotland, radio training for a week. I've missed that one out, I believe. And Dunbar, and sang cowboy songs together. And we were very good friends. He told me he had a girlfriend in London. Didn't know whether he'd ever see her again, and he didn't. But unfortunately, I didn't get her address. This was somebody we lost. We would have loved to have. He was the only one in our lot who was actually killed in action. Then one day he disappeared. He was in action. Apart from the washerwoman and her daughter with her English classes, with whom I became very friendly, and the old woman, when I told her about my brother, started to cry. Because at that point I had to explain to her that I was very fond of her daughter, but I could not think of getting engaged, and I because of the war, I could not think. I had to explain this because she caught something the girl wrote to me in Italian or something, and she cried and she kissed me. And so there were you asked me about people, the Italians, how I got on with people. There were a few other Italians I talked to, but there was one other family where the man was an overseer in the padrones business, olives mostly. Girls were picking olives, weren't allowed to bend their knees so that they weren't lazy, but they sang whilst they were picking olives from the ground. There were no nets catching them, as I think they do nowadays. And one day the padrone sent me a horse and carriage. He had a septic hand, I think, and again I filled it with this powder. But opposite us, not far from us, was a big house, and the overseer, obviously well-paid man, had a lovely family, a son, beautiful daughters, and they invited us often, several of us, to come, and we danced there with the children, with the girls. They had records, they performed bits from operas for us. It was a lovely social life, but the son, Tonino, was still a fascist, but not a fascist, not an... Italian fascists weren't anti-Semitic, most of them. They simply thought that Mussolini was the right man. So it seemed that he hadn't discarded his fascist. But they were happy the war was over, and they welcomed us, and all this was without sort of quid pro quo. We didn't bring them, I think maybe some of the others did, but we often went to visit them. And then O'Hara disappeared, and we were moved to outside. Oh yes, on one occasion Tonino came to me. He had a huge septic wound. It was all black, also in his instep. And I put some of that powder over it. But two things happened. Well, one thing, two things. I had run out of powder, and I didn't know what to do. So I thought that these pills and the powder sounded similar. There must be some relation. So I shaved the pills into powder and put it on his black, huge black hole. And but I arranged to take him to the doctor to Monopoly the next day. But that night I couldn't sleep. I kept on worrying whether what I'd put on his wound was the wrong thing. I literally kept waking up, and I had poisoned him or made it worse or something or the other. And I came to the doctor in Monopoly, found out that military doctor treated civilians in Monopoly. They were queuing up outside in a little waiting room. I found that wonderful that the English military doctor was treating everyone. There was no Italian doctor around. They'd all been called up to the front, and they were still in the armies, although they were now no longer on the German side. And I told the sergeant, or the corporal, who was the orderly, about what I'd done. So he said, well, you better come in. I came in with Tonino to the doctor. And the doctor just, I explained to him what I'd done. He said, it's all right, it is the same stuff. But Corporal Sanders, you are not in future to do any kind of medication to anybody. Bring them to me. Of course, that was easily said. It wasn't so easily done. He didn't understand my position, but anyway. Soon after that, we were transferred to near outside Siena.
Just before we move on to that, you're saying a monopoly. Jimmy Darton kept things to himself. Obviously, you wouldn't be privy to what they were doing, Jimmy Darton and at headquarters.
I think Jimmy Darton knew pretty well what was done at HQ.
But you wouldn't have had. He would have kept that from you.
He wouldn't have told us now. But he did tell us, for instance, on one occasion, that they'd got contact with Georgie Brand and his group, and Georgie and Brand's group suddenly turned up.
This is it. And this is another thing I was going to ask: was that Michael O'Hara wasn't the only chap who came back? That's right. There was another.
Michael O'Hara didn't come back. I mean, except
the first time he came.
He came back several times from his dispatch. It was more than once. Every time he came back from one of his dispatch jobs, he told me he stopped in Rome and spent most of his money whoring and drinking. And do you know, I wasn't shocked. Actually, I've never been a shockable. I still am not shockable. I just look at life and I think that's a good thing for me. It's made my life easier. Because if you start being shocked and start criticizing people and having a point of view and having an ethical... I have my ethics, but I don't assume that they have to be imposed on other people. Sorry, go off into appraising myself again. And you know, afterwards I was very pleased that he had done that. He got something out of life. And later on I found out exactly what he had done. I'll tell you more about that. We went to Siena, we were transferred to Siena. By that time he had gone into action. And we were still waiting, Theo and I. And the waiting became a bit bothersome. I was having a social life, a wonderful life. Lots of girls outside Siena. Mind you, you couldn't meet them privately unless you decided to say, shall we get engaged? Because they were treated as prostitutes if they were seen alone with a soldier. But I had lots of friends, not only girls. Families, a couple of families who went for picnics. I became friends with the pianist of the Soldiers Club in Siena, and he and his family came and visited us, and we visited them. I bought myself a dog for a KD shirt, so the army paid for that little dog, called her Tess, full of fleas when I bought her from the peasant, and I should never have done that. I had already had one dog in Carmarthen, Napanyuko, and had to leave him behind, whom I called Prince because it was Wales. Now I did it again, but there you are, doing these things. And I eventually had to leave Tess behind, and from what I learned afterwards, she ran wild. But Tess was a lovely little dog, and she was great company for me, and lived in my room in the morning, woke me up for me to open the door, and she ran out to do her bit. And opposite a valley, which was a vineyard valley, lived a family with whom I was very good friends, and Tess always ran there. And when I woke up in the morning for breakfast, I called Tess, and you saw this dog running down one hill and running, jumping up. It was beautiful. I mean, I had a beautiful life in outside Siena. And I went into Siena, which is a fairy tale town. You should go and visit it sometime. It really is a fairy tale town. I had lots of friends there. It was a family of youngsters. I never met their parents or anything, but I was always invited to their garden, a little group of youngsters, and we talked and we danced and we sang. And
waiting.
Then one day Darton said to me, it so happened that all the others were out. Oh, yes, I've forgotten something important. I'll come back to it in a moment. Very important. Darton said to me, well, as soon as we get contact from O'Hara, it'll be yours and Teo's turn. So at long last, I knew what we were waiting for, because O'Hara was caught and killed, so we never went into action. The war, if they had known it, they probably would have sent us into action. But they were waiting for O'Hara. Apparently O'Hara had to prepare what was called a reception committee. Now, I've forgotten something very important whilst you were still at Sea View.